Oarsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Oarsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees? Check. Loaner cars and free car washes? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Oarsman story.
Oarsman Kia of Alexandria. Let's ride together.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to week 3 of Redskins Talk the Podcast. We are not exactly where we thought we would be, honestly. At 0-2, the Redskins have lost 2 home games, won a division game to the Dallas Cowboys. I've got my man Rich Tandler with me as always. And Tandler, I'm going to start by putting you on the spot. Did the better team win when the Redskins played the Cowboys?
No, I don't think so. I don't think you can look at the missed opportunities. Primarily on the arm of Kirk Cousins. I think it's fair to say that if Kirk Cousins is the guy who was playing last December, the Redskins win this game going away. So the Redskins are not a juggernaut by any means, but it's a game they should have won. Period. Especially at home, last week. So I don't think the better team won. The better team on Sunday won, but the better team didn't win.
All right, I think I agree with Tandler. Sorry to throw you on the spot right away. I do want to say in today's podcast is going to be a lot of fun. We've got Brian Mitchell coming on and Ralph Vacchiano from SNY to give us a Giants preview. I'm going to go ahead and tease something that B. Mitch and I are going to discuss today. He has an incredible story that involves his college days at an all-day drinking and crawfish party that folks are going to really enjoy. Tandler, you ever had an all-day drinking crawfish party?
Not the crawfish.
Just the drinking. Fair enough. All right, so it's almost hard to tell where to start talking about the Skins right now because, in a way, it seems like hope is lost, right? They're 0-2, 0-1 in the division. The rest of the division looks great all of a sudden. The Eagles, that... Let's not even talk about the Carson Wentz hype that's going to go nuts, but their defense looks really good. I know they've played the Browns and the Bears, but the defense looks good. The Giants look strong, and clearly the Skins have a huge matchup up in the Meadowlands this weekend. And Dallas looks pretty good. Dak Prescott was calm under pressure, and I think that's the most important thing for a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, well, the Redskins certainly didn't do a whole lot to put pressure on him. Was looking at the game again this morning, and three-man rush happened a lot. And that's not, I don't know, I question that strategy. I think, he's pretty good getting out of pressure, and you got to be careful rushing him. But, it just didn't seem like they ever did anything to take him off of his game.
It's one thing not to blitz, which frankly I disagree with. I think they're better off blitzing. But it's another to only rush 3 guys.
Yeah, exactly. So, he gets the coverage back, and the coverage wasn't, if he had good coverage. But, I noticed this during the game, and Jay Gruden mentioned it in his Monday press conference. I mean, guys were getting back into their hook zones. I mean, he had wide open spaces to throw to, even with 8 people in coverage. I mean, what difference does it make?
All right, so you talked about the hook zones there. I think the linebacking group needs their feet held to the fire, or whatever the hell that cliche is. I don't think the Redskins linebackers have performed good enough at this stage of the season. And I'm saying both the outside linebackers have not done a good enough job applying pressure on quarterbacks, and the inside linebackers. I get that they are having to make a lot of tackles in the run game, but I think the middle of the field, soft inside within 7 to 10 yards, has been kind of wide open, and that's a huge part of the Skins really struggling to get off the field on third downs.
Yeah, they're getting sucked in and play action a lot, which happens, but you know it can't be an automatic. On third down, on third and nine, getting caught in the play action is not any excuse. You've got to get back there and be where you're supposed to be.
So what is up with Kirk? We've heard. I think smartly, Jay Gruden is defending his guy because he needs to. Because if he stops defending him, then the tune changes quick. But Gruden said this week, talking with our Rob Carlin, that Kirk is just a little stressed out and he needs to calm down and play football. Is it that simple? And if he is stressed out, what the hell, man? Get unstressed.
Yeah, but that's easier said than done, I guess. I mean, I think that he is obviously under, he's making $20 million this year. He was kind of, although he certainly didn't make his contract demands public by any means, he kind of set himself up. The word was he wanted, $20 million plus over several years. And, that kind of put him on the spot. And you overthrow a guy, Jameson Crowder there in the first drive, that says to me, pressure. He's thinking too much. He's not just playing.
Did the same thing with DeSean Jackson too, later in that game.
Yeah, that's a little tougher pass, I think. But anyway.
But here's one thing I'd argue, and not specific to that Crowder play or the Jackson play, because you got to hit those. But while Kirk's completion percentage is always high, I've never found him to be the most accurate quarterback in a way that's not really measurable. But if you think about, even when things were going so well last year, the 6-8 game stretch, however you want to define it, often receivers would have to reach back for a ball or reach up for a ball, and it would just take them out of stride from plays that could have been big gains and potential touchdowns into a 20-yard gain, a 25-yard gain. Did you ever notice that?
Yeah, and I think that's at least in part, him being in his first year of being a starter. I think that's something that over the years, some guys do have a knack for it. Some guys can just, come out and boom, they're hitting guys right in stride consistently. I think that's something that he's going to have to work on, and it's not necessarily going to get fixed this year. If he can get a little bit better at it this year, I think that would be good progress for him.
So what's crazy is, I think you and I agree, week one, I think the Skins were just outclassed. The Steelers were a better team. Washington had opportunities early to score. They didn't take advantage, and that thing was kind of lost. Week two, I think the same as you. I think the Skins should have won that game. They didn't. I think the culprit in that one, I think you got to point to Kirk after that game more so than any other in a long time. They ran the ball somewhat efficiently, didn't really stick with the run, but I can't put that loss on the defense. I really can't. They held the Cowboys to 3.4 yards per carry. Dak wasn't overly impressive. He looked good, but nothing crazy. Kirk makes a couple plays. They win that game going away.
Yeah, I agree, and that was really the difference. Although, I think the defense does deserve some share of the blame. I said at the opening, if the Kirk of 2015 is a quarterback on Sunday, they put up 40 points and it's a laugher.
Right. All right, well, let's turn our focus to the New York Giants and the Meadowlands this weekend. How excited are you to hear about Josh Norman and Odell Beckham all week?
It's, well, hearing about it, I'm looking forward to Sunday at 1 o'clock when it actually starts. The lead up and the the hype for it. Whatever. We'll participate. We'll write some stuff about it.
Yep.
I guess the first question is, will it be a one-on-one matchup, or are they going to do what they've been doing and stick to sides?
So I actually wrote about that on CSMMidAtlantic.com. There's a plug for our bosses. But I wrote about that from Gruden talking with Rob Carlin, and he was being a bit flippant. Like, I think he was kind of joking around, but Gruden even said, he's like, who knows, maybe we'll see Josh on Odell every snap. And I think we saw it late in that Cowboys game where Josh lined up against Dez a lot more. I think we're going to see a lot more of Josh versus Beckham this week compared to what we saw of Josh versus Antonio Brown week one.
Yeah, well, look, Breland has handled Dez well in the past, especially when he had linebackers in the hook zones.
Right.
He has not handled Beckham well in the past. I mean,
nobody has in his defense.
Yes, absolutely. Even Josh Norman didn't. He got some yards and a touchdown when they met up, but that
right.
kind of got buried in all of that. But I think Norman is the best choice to take on the challenge. Maybe he can get in his head a little bit.
Yeah.
Maybe he can, can get to him, which I don't think Breland can do. Hey, but look, whoever doesn't have him, there's also Victor Cruz, who I believe is usually in the slot. At least that's where he was before he got injured. I haven't watched them yet since he's been back. And the rookie Shepard.
Sterling Shepard.
He's actually leading the team in receiving yards. He's got a yard more than Beckham does. So, whoever is out, whoever you're covering is not going to be an easy task.
I think the key to slowing down the Giants' offense is going to be hitting Eli Manning. It is not going to the way to beat the Giants is not found in the secondary. It's found in the defensive line. And I don't know that the Skins are the team to do that, but I think they're going to go up to New York in full desperation mode. And the results have been ugly, ugly, ugly in the Meadowlands for the Redskins. I mean, you told me the other day, is what, since 2011 they haven't won up there?
Yeah, and then before that, you go back to 2007. So
two wins in the last decade.
2008 on, yeah.
Yikes. It's going to be fun to watch. Rich, I know we need to wrap here. What is your biggest key for Skins in New York this weekend?
I think it's, they've got to put up points. The way this team is going to, they can control. If they do manage to control Beckham and Manning and things like that, controlling these guys, they're probably still in the 20s, in the low to mid 20s. So they're going to have to put some points up. It means Cousins is going to have to be accurate. It's hard to run against them. They've given up 77 yards in two games to the Cowboys and the Saints, 77 yards per game in their two games. And so that's going to be, it's going to be tough to run against him, but it's going to be, it's got to be Kirk slinging. He's got to be on the money. He's got to be on his game. If he is, they've got a shot. If he's not, they could be limping back at 0-3.
Oh, boy. 0-3 is going to suck. Our day-to-day life will be so hard if they're 0-3. Taylor, this is my last question. I know that, I believe, Saturday you are going to go meet up with your kids. Your kids live in Brooklyn. Brooklyn is a pretty hipster area these days. Do you have, like, skinny jeans and perhaps, like, an ironic T-shirt to wear? Or what's your plan when you hit the streets of Brooklyn?
I think I'm going as... I'm going as I am. The skinny jeans would not go over well in Brooklyn. I'd probably be kicked out.
Fair enough. If you do wear skinny jeans, will you tweet out a picture?
Hey, if you don't get a pick, it didn't happen, okay?
Fair enough. Thank you, Chandler. Talk to you soon.
Okay.
All right, a very big thank you to our next guest. Brian Mitchell is joining us. B-Mitch, thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate it. I was told, Chick told me you would never come on, so I think this is a victory for us.
Well, you know, sometimes people like to talk without knowing who somebody really is. You know, chicks just like to run that big mouth at times.
Well, Eddie likes to bust my chops any chance he can, so.
You know how he is.
All right, man, let's talk a little football before I start asking you for Thanksgiving turkey recipes. So, I'm serious. I want your recipe. That turkey's so good. But 0-2, how the hell did the Redskins get here? And more importantly, you know, Jay Gruden's got to say that they still have a lot to play for, right? He's the coach. You have to say that. But,
well, he has to say it, but then again, you look at 14 games left, they do have a lot to play for. You look at the Steelers game, they were in that game in the fourth quarter, and then they made mistakes. The Cowboys game, again, mistakes. Turnovers in the red zone, penalties, unfortunate penalties. You know, they can say, you know, we can't kill ourselves, can't shoot yourself in the foot, every cliche out there. I don't think they were ready to play football at the pro football level when the regular season started. I think by not playing in the preseason, yeah, a lot of people didn't. But those teams are far along than the Redskins. I think it hurt them more than it did other teams.
So you think it goes back to not playing enough in the preseason?
Definitely. You really look at Kirk Cousins right now, he's not on point. You know, people can say what they want, and you'll hear coaches, and I want you to pay attention to this. Sometimes coaches say, well, you can't practice game speed. But then again, they'll come back when they don't want their people to play. They'll say, well, they can learn all this in practice. Well, you don't play game speed in practice. So I feel that team was a little behind in the first game, a little behind in the second game, and they better get going. You know, if you watch, anybody watch Carson Wentz on Monday night, you know that team can play, and that kid can play.
Yo, so he looked impressive, man. He really did.
That's a guy who's been coached up, and the playbook is opened up. All right, they throw the ball, but they try to run the ball. I just feel that we are so hell bent on throwing the ball, and everybody wants to look good, who's play callers, so that they don't put in a whole offense. You know, every time I hear about an offensive coordinator, it's about the passing game. Well, you know, Joe Gibbs, in my book, was as good as any I see today. I don't care how young, I don't care if you want to call them gurus, they haven't gotten close to Joe Jackson Gibbs, and that man ran the hell out of the football, and he still had his quarterback throwing the ball through there.
Two things, then, if we'll talk run game. They got away from Matt Jones, and I thought that was some of Matt Jones' best running on Sunday against the Cowboys. He was being patient, he was letting holes develop, and he hasn't done it much, but he put his shoulder down and trucked a couple people. In the stadium, you could hear people cheering, and then most of that fourth quarter, they didn't go back to Jones, especially the third down, third and one, and you have Chris Thompson in there. What was your reaction when you saw that play?
You got a guy that weighs 230-plus pounds, and he's not in the game. You let Alfred Morris go, and you kept Matt Jones. It makes no sense to have Matt Jones on the sideline when you're in that short yardage situation. You know, they made all their moves because they say he's their guy. But you're not using him like he's your guy. And listen, I've been critical of Matt, but I would say in that game against Dallas, he came out to play, and they went away from him. And you cannot expect a running back to really do a lot if he doesn't get the 12, you know, 8, 12, 14, those type of carries. You got to give him the football, because a lot of running backs would be hitting 6 yards, 4 yards, 3 yards, 6 yards, then boom, they'll hit a 30-plus yarder. And they don't do that enough. I think you look at the chances that it takes or the opportunities that a guy has to have to get that big run, well, they don't give him enough.
I agree. I mean, I asked Jay Gruden this, and I asked Sean McVay, and I'm trying to get them to actually tell me a number. Neither of them would, and I understand because, you know, the game flow dictates a lot. But what would you say is the number of carries, A, that Redskins running backs should get, and then B, that specifically Matt Jones should get? I'd say it's you got to have running backs running the ball at least 20 times, probably 25 times a game, and I think Matt Jones should be at 17 carries a game.
I think it's 20 plus, and I think if you're going to run the football and Matt Jones your guy, he should be running the ball most of the time unless Chris Thompson come in on a third down and get a draw or something like that. Robert Kelly, they kept him around. He hasn't touched the football field yet. I don't understand that either, you know, because he's shown he's a very good pass protector and all. But if Matt, you know, listen,
I know that the 35 carry a game running back is no longer there, but we watched on Monday night last week, and I saw for Matt Forte, didn't he touch it, what, 30 times? He rushed 100 yards.
That Thursday night
yards.
Game? Yeah,
the Thursday night game. And he had 3.3 yards of carry. He didn't have over 4 yards of carry, but guess what? The threat of that run made the play action work a lot better. It made them have to pay attention to it. We watched for 2 weeks, in a sense, that teams have dropped back. They have dropped their defense and said, we're not letting DeSean Jackson beat us over the top. So you throw your stuff underneath. And they still don't run the football. Now, I don't know if they can't run it, but or they just don't run it, because if you're dropping that many people back, it's only four or five in the box.
Right.
Your offensive line should be able to beat that other team's tail. And they brought Callahan here because he was a great run guy. Well, I see him getting overruled by the passing guys.
Well, and you know what else? That I wrote about this, I mean, when they hired Callahan, which is what, over a year ago now, I mean, two off seasons ago anyway. You know, the Cowboys' run game, which Callahan kind of got credit for, really took off once they removed Callahan's play-calling duties, and it went to Scott Linehan. And I think Bill Callahan has a reputation, and a deserved reputation. I mean, he works the offensive linemen's butts off. I mean, you see him at practice. You see him in Richmond. The O-line is out there another half hour after everybody else leaves. Callahan works them hard, but even if you go back further in his career, think about Bill Callahan went to Nebraska to be the head coach at Nebraska, and he was, you know, Nebraska's famous for the power option, right? All they do is run the ball. Bill Callahan installs a West Coast offense at Nebraska. He's not this power rushing guy that he's been touted to be.
Yeah, but he made his offensive line better. You look at the amount of time Kirk had to throw the ball on Sunday, and the way that they opened up holes for Matt Jones, this offensive line is better. I don't think we always hear that players take on the personality of the coach, and I truly believe that. And if you look at this football team now, they have that mindset of, we're a pass team, we'll run it when we have to. Because if it's fourth and one, a third and one, a third and inches, and a coach throws the ball instead of running it, and the offensive line is not pissed, then something is wrong. Well, now I tell you what's wrong. Their mindset, what they do in practice every day, they are a pass-first team. And that is why the guys don't have a problem with it. If Joe Gibbs ran through a ball on third and one and didn't get it, that offensive line would have been highly pissed at him and probably would have said something to him. And the next time he'll run it over and over again. What? You can't tell me. We get inside the red zone, and we are on the five-yard line, and we have a yard to go in that, and we go back to the backfield to throw the football.
Well, and if
Kirk Cousins didn't play well, but was he put in the right situation?
If you know you're going to go for it on fourth down like they did, why not pass on third down and then try to go for it on fourth down? Because I think what happened on that play is Chris Thompson was in because they were running no huddle, and he was the guy in the formation. So fine, run your pass play there. Then if you don't get it, the clock stops, and you can sub Matt Jones in.
My thing is, I don't care if everybody in the building know you're running the football. I should be able to line my big guys up, put my big running back in, and blow your asses off the ball and get at least 1 yard.
Well said.
They had no problem with it back in the day with the Hogs. And I understand this is not the Hogs, but I guarantee you, offensive linemen much rather run block, I'm talking about roll grade, straight ahead, than they would pass block. Pass block is passive. Run block, you get to be aggressive. And you give me a percentage, I don't have to give you a percentage, I would say 98% of all football players are aggressive.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. My feeling in the locker room after both games so far has been, after Monday night against Pittsburgh, that team was a little bit embarrassed, but kind of realized they were outclassed against the Steelers. Things could have gone a little differently, but I don't think they were that mad. After the Cowboys game, the locker room felt to me like they were pissed off. Like they realized they gave away a game that they should have won. And especially offensively, those guys seemed very frustrated.
Yeah.
Is that your take? I mean, To me, they should have won that Cowboys game. You just got to get
in the end zone. I totally agree with you, and I think by listening to Deshaun Jackson, a lot, he said a lot, and I would have said probably something exactly like him. We always hear, let's be patient, let's relax. He said, I don't want to hear, be patient, it's okay, relax. I want to hear, let's get off of our, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Let's go do something. He want to hear, how are we going to get this thing done? All of this, let's be patient. You were patient the whole damn offseason. You were patient all during training camp.
They were patient now, in the preseason.
Now is not the time to be patient. Now is the time to start cracking the whip. Okay, you're in a Belmont. Okay, you're in the States. And you're trying to come around and you just say, let's be patient. My heart's going to go. If you don't start hitting that horse and getting those little studs to the side, the horse is not going to run fast. So if you're sitting up here just holding the reins, like that's what they've been doing. They've been holding, all these coaches have been holding the reins. But you know what? It's another jockey over there that's been hitting his in the side a little bit. You know, trying to edge him on. And that team is playing better.
Right.
So when you look at it in a horse racing mentality, they are steadily sitting up here trying to be patient, and they're not trying to crack the whip to make sure that they can win this race.
All right. I think that's a very good analogy. And now, since you brought up horse racing, I'm going to ask you a rather bizarre question that I think I heard you tell this story one night in the newsroom. And if I'm wrong, you can just laugh at me. Did you ever punch a horse? Didn't you say that?
JP, your ears are too damn good, man. When I was in college, we had a little thing, a day we call Lanyard, where they kind of shut down school. You have all the crawfish and all the beer you can drink. They have buses to take you back. And I was dancing with a young lady from New Orleans, and one of the guys from New Orleans, who happened to be a university police, he decides he's going to just walk in between us and start dancing. So I kind of took my hand behind his head and shoved him right on out the way, you know? So he's a university police, so he wasn't in uniform that day. He was basically a student. So they kicked me out of the lanyard. And while I was out, this police officer kept bumping me with the horse. And I turned around and I kind of hit the horse in the jaw. I was, I'm a much calmer person these days. And I guess many people would say calm.
Oh, my
God. But back in the day, I was a little muff.
What happened? Like, did the horse kick you or anything, or did you know it was time to get out of the party at that point?
Now the horse would kind of step back a little bit, and then the thing about it, it was one of the deans had watched everything, and the dean was out there, so they tried to throw me up against the ball and stuff like that. And they did try to take me down to to the university police department, and the dean stepped in and was like, you all. Basically, I'm picking with him, and I kind of, smoothed out of that one.
Good for you, man. I think you are the definition, or certainly College B. Mitch was the definition of a raging Cajun.
Yeah, I was raging.
All right, so you are a dude that always eats very well, and like I said earlier, you bring in a killer spread every Thanksgiving here in the office, which I'm kind of bummed. I'll be in Dallas this year, so I won't get to have B. Mitch's Thanksgiving. But I wanted to ask you this.
Hell, nobody might not be able to get it in his own Thanksgiving day.
That's true. What's your favorite cut of meat? What's your go-to steak?
Go-to steak? I like the bone-in filet mignon. Ribeye would be good as well. But the bone-in filet seems to be as flavorful as a ribeye, but very, very tender.
Yeah, the filet is as tender as it gets, but I'm a ribeye guy. I need that fat. Well, probably also says a lot about my physique versus your physique.
Ribeye is what I really, really love, but I'm told by the doctor, don't eat too many ribeyes. If you're going to eat steak, eat the filet.
All right, and this can be our last one. I know you got a lot of stuff to do today, and we appreciate you coming on.
No problem.
I know you're a Louisiana guy. That is home, but you've lived here in D.C. for a long time now.
Yeah.
Do you like the Chesapeake Bay seafood? Or the Louisiana seafood better?
Man, please. Chesapeake Bay seafood can't touch Louisiana.
Oh, get out of here.
Let me break you down a little bit, okay? Let me educate you all. Let me educate the whole area. I can take you all right now to all the little places like Grand Isle, and all those places in Louisiana where we do a lot of seafood, a lot of catching seafood. You know how many trucks are from Maryland that are down there grabbing out crabs? See, I've been up here for 27 years now, 26, 27 years, and I found out, and I talked to a lot of crab places here, and they say that they're harvesting so much. The jumbos and the extra large crabs normally come from North Carolina, Galveston, Texas, Louisiana. They don't come from up here mostly.
But as a native Marylander, I'm going to say that's because it's been over harvested up here. But
well, that's what you all do. But then again, but y'all call them Maryland crabs and be getting them from somewhere else. But the thing about it, I mean, I know up here y'all love y'all Old Bay. It's okay. I like our flavor because it's Old Bay to me is just it's kind of salty. But
yeah.
The stuff that we eat in Louisiana is flavorful. See, when you say spicy, people think it's hot. Spicy means flavor, means different types of spicy, not just hot. And I don't think Old Bay can live up to that.
So one more thing I'll say in defense of Maryland crabs. I think what happens is folks up here it's like tourists and people that move to Maryland, D.C., Virginia, think like, oh, it's summertime. It's time to go eat crabs. If you're going to a place in the DMV for crabs in June, you are absolutely getting North Carolina or Louisiana crabs. The time for crabs in our area is in the fall, after the crabs have had all summer to grow and get fat. That's why...
You know what? JP, I go crabbing with one of my buddies, okay? My buddy Jim, he works for the post office, and he's a commercial crabber. I've seen some big crabs up here.
Yeah.
But I've seen some monster crabs in Louisiana. Understand?
I've
seen monsters up here.
All right.
You know, I've seen like some dolphins up here, but I see some killer whales down there.
Brian, I really appreciate you coming on, man. Thank you very much,
man.
And we will talk to you soon.
All right, JP. Take care, man.
Take care. This is very cool for us now. We've got Ralph Vacchiano from SNY joining us. Ralph is the NFL insider at SNY. He covers both the Jets and the Giants. Today, we're obviously going to have him give us a Giants preview. So, Ralph, you've got a very wounded Redskins team heading north to the Meadowlands this weekend. You know, the Skins have been struggling, coming in at 0-2, but they might not be as bad as that record looks. What do you think the Giants are expecting Sunday?
I think they're expecting a desperate team. There's nobody other than the quarterback who was around long enough to remember 2007 with the Giants, but I'm sure that'll be brought up this week because that season they were 0-2. They looked terrible. Their defense was horrible. The quarterback was struggling, and they went down to Washington and barely pulled out a game to turn their season around. They ended up winning the Super Bowl. So, there were some that remember that feeling. They know they've been 0-2 before. They know how desperate that can feel. And I think, you know, they understand from last year that the Redskins are not a bad team. They're just struggling right now. And, you know, if you looked at them, you wouldn't think they would go 0-3. And I'm sure they're going to come out firing. So, you know, the Giants know they're going to be hit with everything the Redskins have.
So, Ralph, I remember that 2007 game. Am I wrong? There was a big fourth down play that the Giants got to win it. Is that right?
Yeah, it was a goal line stand
okay.
In the fourth quarter, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
The Redskins tried to go for it to pull ahead, and the Giants stopped them.
I remember that one well. All right. So, for us down here, and I'm sure you as well, there's going to be a million words spoken and written and pixelated about Odell Beckham versus Josh Norman. So let's try to save ourselves from that. Tell us about Victor Cruz and Sterling Shepard and how good those guys have been for Eli and that Giants offense.
They've really been terrific. You know, Victor Cruz has looked as healthy, as quick. Maybe not quite as fast, but you know, there's not that much of a difference, you know, as he was before his injury. He is definitely all the way back. I don't know if he's going to be an 80 catch, 1,200 yard guy again, but they don't need him to be. With Cruz and with Shepard, what they have are two guys who potentially could be number one or number two receivers on other teams that teams can't really devote a lot of resources to, and you watch that against the Saints last week where, you know, the Saints sent everybody at Odell Beckham, and I think he caught 8 passes and only had about 10 yards to catch, but every time he caught the ball, there were 4 guys surrounding him. And that limited his effectiveness, but then look at what Cruz and Shepard did. You know, they didn't even have Cruz had a little bit of a struggle. He had a fumble and a drop, so it could have been better. But the two of them, the three of them combined, end up catching 20 passes for almost 300 yards, and that's pretty good for any kind of receiving threesome.
So I was kind of surprised by the flow of that Saints game. Now, the Giants-Saints game was going on at the same time Skins-Cowboys was on, so I didn't get to watch any of it. But, you know, you see the score updates inside the stadium and stuff. What did the Saints do anything to slow the Giants down, or was it all just turnovers? That to only score 16 points against the Saints defense surprised me by a high-powered Giants squad.
Yeah, it's a little bit deceiving, I guess, because the Saints didn't really stop the Giants. The Giants did have 3 turnovers. They twice were in Saints territory. They had one time where they went for it on 4th and goal from the 1 or 2, and the Giants didn't get it. They had a drop, actually 2 drops, I think, in the end zone. So they shot themselves in the foot there. They had another situation where they were 4th and goal at the 1 and decided to go for a chip shot field goal because I think they were 1st and goal at the 1 there and couldn't punch it in. So, you know, the Giants, certainly the potential was there to blow this team out if they had held on to their passes. They hadn't fumbled the ball. They had at least 4 or 5 other really good scoring opportunities that they blew. So, no, the Saints defense did not slow the Giants down much at all, but that Giants offense has not really been completely in sync and mistake-free the first 2 weeks.
Okay, so what the Redskins should be able to do well, considering Josh Norman and Bashaud Breeland and the other guys in their secondary, their pass defense should be a plus for Washington. Their run defense, however, has shown the ability to crack. Pittsburgh gouged them on the ground week 1. Last week, they actually held the Cowboys somewhat in check. But the Giants come into this thing not really running the ball very well, right?
No, their offensive line has not been particularly good the first 2 weeks. They ran the ball well in spots. In the 4th quarter against the Cowboys, they ran well, but they're not really a big round team at the moment, mostly because the line has struggled so much. The holes just haven't really been there. So you can't even say that they've leaned more on the pass, but they were fairly balanced against the Saints. They're just not running it effectively.
So with the Redskins, they've been able to move the ball pretty well. They're just not able to get into the end zone. It seems like it's kind of similar for the Giants. I want to switch sides of the ball and ask about the Giants' defense. They spent a lot of money this offseason to bring in some pretty big-name free agents. You know, the talk here in D.C. was if the Redskins go on that defensive spending spree, everybody talks about, oh, offseason champs, offseason champs. The Giants do it, and everybody says, oh, that might be just what they need. My thought, the way I read that, is you've got a front office that sees Eli Manning probably in getting to the twilight of his career and an offense that should be able to score. Hey, let's go out and get some defensive players and give this guy maybe 1 or 2 more runs at a title. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I think so. I think they felt like they had a lot of pieces in place and they needed to obviously rebuild the defense. You know, it's fair to say that, you know, they could deserve some criticism for being the off-season champs. You know, as you know, it's, of course, how you spend the money, not necessarily whether you spend it.
Sure.
And it remains to be seen if the Giants spent it wisely or not. But one of the things that they had working for them was, you know, they had the quarterback, they had the offensive weapons. On defense, they had nothing. Absolutely nothing last year. They were the worst in the league. They blew 5 fourth-quarter leads. And you go out and add some real quality players. Forget the prices. You add an Olivier Vernon, a Damon Harrison, a Janoris Jenkins. You have to improve your team a little bit. And they were coming from such a low point that even a little bit of improvement could make the difference between, you know, 2 and 3 more wins, maybe 3 or 4 more wins. Because they had those 5 games where they blew those fourth-quarter leads, that they just had any defensive talent at all, they might have won 3 or 4 of them. So, you know, they clearly were off-season champs. They don't have a history of spending, which I'm sure probably has eased the criticism.
Right.
But it remains to be seen whether this is for real or not.
Yeah, and the Skins offense is going to test them. Kirk Cousins hasn't played great yet this year, I would say, but he's gone over 300 passing yards in both games. I mean, he passed with 360 yards against the Cowboys, and if they could have gotten one touchdown late in that game instead of field goals, I think we're having a very different conversation, and the mood here in D.C. would be very different going to New York. Ralph, what's the best way for our folks to follow you for Giants and Jets info?
Well, you can definitely check out my stories on SNY.TV. I got Giants and Jets stuff there. You can follow me on Twitter at RVacchiano, SNY. Of course, if you're up in the New York area or a little higher up in the Northeast, you can always watch me on SNY.TV. Usually went to the Mets game.
Cool. Since we got you here, the Jets look pretty good too, man. What do you think of that squad?
Yeah, they have looked pretty good. They could have easily won their first game against the Bengals. That was kind of a bitter loss for them. But they have all the pieces. They've got a potentially devastating pass rush. They've got tremendous wide receivers and a smart quarterback. Matt Forte gives a good extra dimension to their offense. What's working against them are two things. One, they're in the division with the Patriots, and so they proved to me that they're not going to win the division. You have to assume they will. So they're playing for a wild card spot. And the other thing is their next four games are absolutely brutal, all against playoff teams, three on the road. And 1-1, they need to find a way to get out of that stretch 3-3 in total. Otherwise, this could end up being a long season for them.
Yeah, dealing with that that Patriots thing has been a thorn in the side of the Jets for many years now, it seems. One kind of interesting subplot while we're talking is there's a brewing, I don't want to say controversy, but when the Redskins selected Brandon Scherff last year early in the first round, a lot of folks wanted them to take Leonard Williams from USC. And Leonard didn't do a heck of a lot his rookie year. I think he battled a lot of injuries, but he's looked great through two games. What do you think of Leonard Williams and the player the Jets have in the young D lineman?
Well, I think he's been fantastic and better than he was last year. I thought he was decent last year. There are scouts who think that he might turn out to be the best defensive lineman that they have. I need to see more. The whole defensive line kind of disappeared in that game against the Bills, but he's got a lot of potential and learning from some pretty good defensive linemen up here.
Right on. All right, the last question, and you can just yell at me on this if you choose not to answer it, but I'm wondering, Ben McAdoo's mustache, is that like a growing look in and around New York City? Will I see a bunch of that this weekend, or is Ben the only one rocking it?
I would say right now he's the only one rocking it. The same goes for his ill-fitting clothes. But I tell you what, if he gets from 2-0 to 4-0 or 5-0, you might see a lot of people mimicking his style in the coming weeks.
I mean, you think about Halloween will be about week 7. If the Giants are 5-2 or 6-1, there's going to be a lot of McAdoo Halloween costumes on Bleecker Street, I bet.
Yeah, there might be, no doubt about that.
Ralph, thank you very much for coming on with us. I look forward to seeing you Sunday at the stadium and appreciate it, and we'll look forward to looking for more of your work.
Hey, no problem, anytime.
Thanks, take care.
Alert. Bonus Redskins Talk podcasting. We are bringing on Mitch Tischler, cameraman extraordinaire. Dude's been covering the Skins for a very long time and always has unique analysis on what he sees from the locker room and the practice fields. Every week, Mitch is unofficially sponsored by the last beer I saw him drink. This week, that would be a hoppy pilsner from our friends at the Vale Brewery in Richmond called Child's Port. Take it away, Tischler.
In 8 seasons, I've seen a lot of losing locker rooms in my time covering the Redskins. But Sunday after their loss to Dallas, it wasn't a sad locker room. It was a room with a bunch of pissed off dudes. Take from that what you will. But Jordan Reed sat in his locker with the 1,000-yard stare for a good 20 minutes. And you all saw the visceral reaction Josh Norman had to a simple drug test. These guys were angry, and from a neutral perspective, you have to like that. The Redskins aren't settling for mediocrity. Or at least it doesn't seem so. They know they can and should be better. How that manifests itself the rest of the season? Who knows? All I know is that there was a real opportunity for guys to pity themselves and turn in, and it sure doesn't seem like that's what they're doing. For their sake and psyche, I hope Sunday in New York isn't a repeat. This has been Tish's Take.
That's it. That's a wrap on Week 3 Redskins Talk, the podcast previewing the Giants game. Want to thank my man Rich Tandler for coming on with us as always. Brian Mitchell was great. B. Mitch told a story of punching a horse. How cool is that? And then Ralph Vacchiano from SNY was awesome. Big thanks to Ralph for coming on and previewing the Giants and giving us a little bit of that Leonard Williams information that's going to sting for some Skins fans. I am JP Finley. Check me out on Twitter at JPFinleyCSN or Facebook, facebook.com/JPFinleyCSN. As always, if you guys have made it this far, I owe you a beer. Let me know on social media if you've made it this far. Just tell me I owe you a beer, and I promise to like it. And one day, if I can corral my boss into buying us a bunch of beer, we'll do it. Thanks a lot. Check out Redskins Talk and subscribe on iTunes. Give us a rating if you can. Thanks.